and psychoanalytic spaces. Corona fatigue and the convergence of past, present, and future. So Deborah, we haven't talked in a while, and I thought we'd kind of check in and talk a bit about the corona fatigue and anything else you want to talk about.
Well, I think, kind of like what you're saying, I think it's interesting. It seems to go in waves. I'm noticing in my practice with my analysands that some weeks are better than others. But I think in the last week or so, one of the things I've been noticing with the numbers going back up with the virus is a lot of people are falling into the sort of this malaise or this, this fatigue or almost, maybe it's sort of this collective dysthymia about just losing interest in things. It ebbs and flows, but I've noticed that. And I think one of the things that I've been really playing with is this idea of the past, present, and future converging. Because right now, I think a lot of things that have happened in the past, just depending on whatever's going on for someone, past trauma is getting activated. And I think some of that is some of the feelings around that about maybe the world not being a safe place or loss, or that's getting constellated. So I think we no longer have a then and a now. We're living in a time where we're all in a free fall together in a way. And I think along with that, because of all of the uncertainty and the change, is I think a lot of the idea of how people would think about the future is falling apart because people are struggling with planning. And I think that's really having an effect on people. So it's almost like the past, present, and future have converged. In some ways that can be a positive thing, which I think you're going to talk about, but I think in some ways it's living in a trauma situation. And I think as analysts, we're trying to find ways of making meaning and also helping people to contain it and also finding ways for it to become sustainable. What are you noticing?
Yeah, I think that's true. I actually was thinking about sort of what you're saying about implicit memory getting activated and how it's being organized in terms of through someone's lens. And I know actually someone I was speaking with this week was talking about the challenges she was having about what she felt was the dominant belief system of colleagues that she's around, where everyone was saying in terms of wearing a mask and having a certain political views, which she herself does not identify with. And where it took us was really how that was her experience growing up, where there was no space for her ideas or even for her to feel like she was visible. So it was she made a really interesting connection of how what was happening right now, because of what's happening with the virus and how it's manifesting, was replicating what she experienced. And it actually seemed to give her a sense of relief for the moment that she was able to see why she was getting so upset with these colleagues, only to see that this was very much replicating an earlier experience. So that came to mind.
That's interesting, because it's almost like, even though this is all happening in real time, being able to name it maybe gave her a vantage point and just creating the capacity or the space to reflect. Yeah, I kind of think along with what you're saying, it is interesting that wearing a mask for some people has become a political statement. And right. I guess some of what I think goes along with what you're thinking, so there's a lot of black and white thinking, but I also think there's a lot of polarization. Mm-hmm. And I'm noticing that people that are finding themselves somewhere in the middle between two poles are feeling censored, feeling that
right.
If they're not on one extreme or the other, that there's that those views aren't welcome, which is, I think, is pretty concerning.
Right. Well, it's right. It's sort of the inability to be with a dialectic. I think you call it the tension of opposites, but it's that inability to be in that space. And I think at times the tendency is to go binary as a way of trying to manage a state. And so I think I would agree that oftentimes being in that, sort of middle ground or gray zone is really hard. I think the other thing that's becoming apparent, and you were talking about sort of the loss of a future, is how the losses are infiltrating one's experience and are now becoming sort of known, where I think initially it wasn't necessarily seen as a loss. It was seen as like a temporary situation. And as this goes on, and it looks like it's going to be going on for a while, I think, this idea of ambiguous loss, which is sort of a unclear, murky sensation. So I'm seeing sort of a lot of that all those absolutisms are being dismantled in terms of, I'm gonna be doing this, or, my kids are gonna be going back to school, or I'm gonna be going, here. And so having to find ways to be in the present time, which actually opens up a discussion of how to help someone be in present time.
That's, yeah, and maybe some of what we're talking about, where it's interesting because of the murkiness of not having a future or being able to imagine a future right now. I wonder if that's contributing to this polarization or this. I mean, it's a way, it's a really an impoverished way of looking at things, which may be why kind of going into a collective regression where things seem very black and white in terms of. Some of the ways people are viewing things. I mean, it's an interesting time because there's an opportunity, I think, for some really needed social change. Yet there's also this polarization that I think sometimes comes about when people are afraid or, when we're going into a chaotic state as things are
Right.
dismantled. I think you just said something about being in the present that's really important. And it just made me think about Viktor Frankl's book, I think Man's Search for Meaning, where
Right.
survived were the people that could imagine a future. That's how they stayed in the present.
Right. Yeah, that's a wonderful. Yeah, because that's exactly right in terms of, surviving the Holocaust. I also think about, Brutal Bennelheim's work, who also one of, I think, did later his work on children. I think I was trying to think of his school in Chicago, but it was the use of fairy tales as a way of creating something else. And I often think about how his work with kids really originated out of a pretty dark place.
Oh, that's so interesting. Von Franz worked a lot with fairy tales. And their thought about that were was that fairy tales were the bare bones of the archetypes, or there's certain universal motifs that play out that one can see in fairy tales. So, it's interesting. It may be one way of looking at it, it's a way of organizing experience and back to creating a vantage point just to reflect on. And it may also be maybe the way you're describing it. I wonder if it's creating a transitional space where there's more room to move around, perhaps reverie or reflection.
Right. It kind of to me is like, creating the idea of the third.
Yeah.
So it's actually opening up, maybe that's what you're saying, kind of another space, right? And if you think about moving out of the binary, is it the opportunity for the third? But W, you were talking about something that I was thinking about in terms of when you were saying about the collective, and I was thinking about, if you think about what's going on right now, and if you think, I wanted to ask you, being a Jungian, about in terms of the shadow, Like, how do you see what's going on now, even in terms of who's in office? And maybe we don't have to get into that, make this political, but I was just wondering how you see this in terms of, if we look at a collective and we look at possibly our shadow, what's happening, do you think?
Well, I that's a really good point, because I think, you know, shadow would be other, you know, if you think about it psychologically, whatever we don't identify with, especially out in the world, becomes shadows. Sometimes what we do with that is we project our shadows onto the other. And I think there's such a sense of other right now. I mean, it's almost like if one isn't picking a side and projecting other, the people in the middle, I think, are the ones that are feeling, I think everybody's feeling vulnerable. I'm just noticing a lot of my clients are talking about, they'll say something and how it gets misinterpreted, and they're becoming even more careful about what they vocalize. And I think that's all about shadow projection. You know, I'm just thinking about even like, and I think some of this has to do with people's sense of safety or well-being. You know, it's sort of like religious wars were the bloodiest, like with the Crusades, because there was some sort of belief that there was a righteousness in something. And I'm starting to see some of that politically, and I find it concerning. So there could either be something that comes out of this, sort of like we were talking about with the transcendent function, or you were, I think, calling the third, or what Jung would think of as holding the tension of opposites, and eventually something emerges, which is what we're all hoping for. But I think putting another way, sort of a going through a dismemberment, or it's a time of death or dismantling, which I think is really frightening. Needs, you know, there definitely needs to be social change, but I think some of people's fears are getting added to this, which is maybe magnifying it, why there's less space to hear other people's opinions.
Right. I wonder what will help, you know, help that to shift. I do think though, maybe what's happening is there's more conversations coming to the surface that possibly weren't happening, that is a positive, right?
That would be bringing shadowness into consciousness.
So right.
Maybe that's what you're saying, versus having it being suppressed or repressed.
Mm-hmm. I wonder. I think that's right. And then I think, you know, what this time is also doing is really getting a lot of us to think about the here and now, and finding ways to be in the here and now that maybe we haven't had the opportunity or the desire or the need to really do that. And I'm seeing that in terms of just working with people, in terms of finding ways to, you know, to ground themselves, whether it be through meditation or some type of spiritual practice that allows them to quiet their mind and be able to be with themselves, as opposed to sort of not, I guess, not being able to have that experience. And I think being in this time is really lending itself to that, because we all are, you know, a lot of us are, you know, shelter in place.
Well, I think kind of what you're saying too is there's, in some ways, although there's a lot of distraction, what's going on in the collective, and I mean, one of the places I think that I'm really seeing it is in my analysis of dreams, because I think that people are processing their personal material, but they're also trying to metabolize what's going on in the world, which is, that would never have been my primary focus before. I would always look at things more from a personal, sometimes there's collective dreams, but nowadays I'm looking at things in terms of objectively about what's going on the world, or subjectively what's going on internally in the personal life, and then also what's getting metabolized in the collective. But I think kind of what you're saying is the energy, so the distractions with that being said, I think there's also, even though we have a lot of distractions, we have less activity out in the world. So the activity that we would use to distract ourselves is falling away, which I think is, people are tending to move more into introverted spaces, which is they're touching places maybe that they haven't been in contact with, whether it's for maybe some unresolved trauma to arise. And I also think it's, besides the spirituality, I think people are finding ways of being more in relationship with their own creativity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's interesting. So we've got this thing that's happening with being in the present. And along with that, I think, at least for some people, there's this need to bracket it. So it's like having a containment. So I think there's sometimes people imagining futures, but there's intervals. Okay, this is what I'm going to do for this period of time. So there's some sort of a, I almost wonder if that's a way of creating some structure. I think it's one of the things that can happen with early, in an early attachment, when children know that their mothers are going to return, they start to get a sense that they can go away and come back. And I think there's some of that that we're trying to do for ourselves in terms of creating that. I think I can't remember if I mentioned this last time, but I remember one time hiking in the desert and running out of water, and it was, we were about 10 miles from the car, and it was 100 degrees, and I remember just thinking, this is just too overwhelming, and the person I was hiking with kept saying, well, let's just get to the next boulder, and we'd get there, and then we'd get to the next boulder, and that's how we got back to the car, because the idea of walking 10 miles in the heat without any water just seemed so overwhelming.
Right.
And so we're using this bracketing of creating these short-term markers is a way of getting through this.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. You know, you were talking about attachment and in terms of the parental figure returning as a way to create sort of a sense of security internally. I think it's also about remembering accessing that. So depending on, you know, if you're talking about how the attachment impacts the ability to co-regulate or self-regulate, there's ways in which are depending on where one is in their attachment, able to pull from that to hold on to prior experience as a way to sustain knowing that they're going to get to the next point, right? Because it's been an experience. So I think you know, a lot of what I'm doing with people is sort of accompanying them on their journey right now in terms of being with and helping them along, that there is someone there with them, as hard as this is, because a lot of people are you know, alone and having to be alone, right? That they know someone's alongside them in this journey. So that kind of connects.
Maybe that's part of this idea of the analytic sessions and the consistency of meeting people every week. It's creating an interval. But I think you're bringing up a really important point. So there's this part of past trauma or things that weren't safe emerging because there's of what's getting constellated right now. But I think what you're saying is remembering that what that's like, just having that sense of security. Mm-hmm. And having that memory is a way of sustaining things. I mean, I'm thinking about it like that idea of the transitional object almost, but mm-hmm. using memory that way.
Right. So, you know, so again, we get back to depending, you know, it's perspective, right? Depending on what one's perspective is and experience and how they organize the world, this is having so many different types of experiences, I guess, or ways of experiencing what's going on.
Yeah, and then I think the other thing that I think we touched more on last time, but also we are living this experience with our analysand.
Mm-hmm.
We're all right. In real time now together.
Right, that transparency that we are in it. I don't know, maybe transparency isn't the right word, although I do think I am more transparent when people are asking me certain questions in regards to what I might be doing in terms of managing the pandemic. But I think there's something truly unusual about practicing in this time. And, you know, I think about, Freud didn't he practice during the Spanish influenza, I believe in 1918? I believe he did. But I think actually he had a child that passed away. I'm not sure about that. But I don't know how much he really brought that into the consulting room. And I think what you were talking about, the collective, is how can that not be brought in?
Well, and I think the other thing that's really changed in a lot of our work is just the importance of the relationship, and that we're sharing this or we're creating this together. And I don't think that was, that wasn't really Freud's orientation. That relationship or connection is so important.
Right, right. Yeah, in fact, I would say that is probably the most important thing. Maybe that's where we can start next time, kind of talking about how you're seeing this with your Anna Lysands in terms of the dream work.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
All right. So to be continued.